There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
Into the second hour of the show, and of course we'll keep you updated with all the live sport, including the second ODI between England and Pakistan, which is ongoing at the moment. The Super Rugby a little later on this afternoon as well.
Yeah, Tom, what I can tell you, at 5 o'clock this evening, the Lions will be taking on the Waratahs. That game will be coming live from Johannesburg. I'll give you starting lineups as they come through. A little bit earlier this morning, the Highlanders beat the Jaguars. The Jaguars have been the story of the season for Super Rugby, but the Highlanders beat them 32 points to 27, and the Chiefs narrowly beat the Sharks 29-23. The Sharks having one of their most successful Australasian tours. And as I said, at 5 o'clock this evening, the Lions from South Africa take on the Waratahs from Australia.
Live for us, though, at the moment is playoff action, playoff football from the championship playoffs. It's the semi-final stages, first leg of the semi-final playoffs. So still plenty of football left in the championship. And it is a West Midland derby. All of the teams involved in the playoff championships, championship playoffs, I should say, have been in the Premier League during their illustrious histories. And talking of histories, they don't get much more historical than Aston Villa and West Brom. They're currently underway at the moment and got a bit of history.
Claire makes the run and he's created the space for Fabian Delph. He could send Villa to Wembley now. It's Scott Sinclair. He does.
Ghazi, going to have a go, deflection, goal. Ghazi, oh, what a goal!
So goals are plenty throughout this. You touched on it a little earlier on, Danny Norton. Just how much football these teams in the championship have to pay.
Exactly. I mean, 46 games they've played each, and then there's still a few more games to go. Still at least three more games to go if they're going to reach the promised land that is the Premier League. But yes, this first leg of this semi-final between Aston Villa and West Bromwich Albion, 33 minutes into it, West Brom lead by 1-0. Aston Villa had the better of the opening 10 minutes, but it was West Brom that got the opening goal in the 16th minute. Dwight Gayle pouncing on a mistake by Glenn Whelan to bear down on goal, putting home with a wonderful low left foot finish into the bottom corner. And quite an anonymous stat here for Villa fans is the fact that West Brom have won 17 of their 21 games in which they've taken the lead so far this season, and they've drawn the other four. So as you might imagine, that goal has helped to really settle the West Brom players who've really started to take control of the game. They're sitting quite deep though, letting Aston Villa come onto them and looking to play them on the break there. But yeah, West Brom with that record of having taken the lead 21 times and yet to lose so far this season will be feeling very confident early on in this playoff semi-final.
June the 1st, Madrid. I understand that flights are something of a premium to Madrid in and around June the 1st, as it will be an all-English Champions League final on June the 1st. And the night before that, or a little earlier than that, will of course be the Europa Cup final, which we can now tell you will also be an all-English final after their own elements of drama on Thursday evening. Chelsea had to wait till they went to penalties. It was a little more straightforward for Arsenal earlier on. They made it through to their European final thanks to some stunning goals from a couple of their key men, Lacazette and of course Aubameyang, who were in good spirits after the game.
Oba, Laka, huge congratulations on tonight. Semi-final last year, you've gone one better this year. How much does this mean to the club?
Well, it means a lot. You know, I think we've learned about last season. So this year we didn't make the same mistakes. So now we are through the final and we are all happy.
You went a goal down. I mean, what did it take from this team to find the character to come through and put on such a convincing performance in the end?
We react well. We knew we have to score minimum one goal today. Thanks to Oba for the hat trick. It was unbelievable tonight, so really thank you, bro.
I mean, it was an incredible hat-trick. Your first hat-trick for Arsenal, what a night to do it. You've got the match ball here. How much do you two enjoy playing together?
Well, you know, we enjoyed a lot. I think we talk a lot about that relationship already. So, yeah, it's it's a pleasure to play with him, with this team, and above all when you win games like this, so you feel very, very good.
It's not been an easy season, has it? I mean, obviously with what happened in the Premier League game against Brighton, but this gives you that chance to get that special place in the Champions League potentially.
Yeah, we want to go Champions League, we want the trophy. We play bad in the last month in the Premier League, so we have to be better now. We go to the final, so we have to use this opportunity to win and go to the Champions League.
Well, we were hoping for an all-English final. We still don't know what's happening in the other game. It could be Chelsea, it could be Frankfurt. Does it even matter who you play in the final?
Yeah, of course. I think now it's final, so it doesn't matter which team. So we have to give everything in the final and win it, you know? Thank you.
Thank you very much, guys.
Arsenal-Chelsea will meet in Baku, Azerbaijan, 2,468 miles away from London. Where both of those two teams are based. 29th of May, with a Champions League spot at stake for the Gunners, who could become the fifth English side to qualify for next season's competition. Chelsea already assured of their place after cementing a top four finish in the Premier League. Must be frustrating being an Arsenal fan in many ways. I mean, this is coming from West Ham fans, so it's sort of pot kettle black to a certain degree, but you look at their form in Europe throughout the season, and it sort of seems to be at odds with some of the form we've seen from Arsenal in the Premier League.
100%. I mean, they've had a bit of a rollercoaster season, haven't they? Their first under Unai Emery since he's taken charge last summer. And, I mean, there were times where it really thought that they would be a dead cert for the top four of the Premier League. Didn't happen for them. But Europe has been, you know, it's been a good place for them, no doubt about that. And no surprise when Unai Emery has already won three Europa League titles in the past. He's going for a record fourth win as a manager there. So they'll be confident going into there. But a lot of pressure on them because even though mathematically they can still finish in the top four tomorrow, it's going to take an eight-goal swing. It's going to take a Tottenham defeat and an Arsenal win with an eight-goal swing in there as well than to do it. Tottenham hosting Everton, Arsenal away to Burnley. Can't really see that happening. So other pressure for them for the Europa League, whereas Chelsea, you know, essentially, they're in third place at the moment. They've already secured their top four place and their Champions League football for next season. But, yeah, it's been a funny one for both Chelsea and Arsenal, where, I mean, Chelsea went, you know, was it 12, 13 games unbeaten at the start of the season, looked like they'd be challenging for the title alongside Man City and Liverpool, then fell away, and then it looked like Sarri could get sacked halfway through the season because the fall for them was so dramatic. Got it together, performed well in the League Cup final, losing to Man City on pens, and then, yeah, kind of getting it together now, making it to Baku for the Europa League final. It's going to be a fascinating final. I can't see which way this is going to go, really. I think Arsenal have had the better of the game so far this year, but Chelsea, the team, are in better form at the moment. So it's going to be an intriguing final either way.
Let's hear from the Arsenal boss, Unai Emery, after that particular game, looking ahead to the final.
Unai, massive congratulations. Your first season at Arsenal, you've taken this club to their first European final in 13 years. How proud are you of this team?
Yes, really, really proud of the players, of the supporters. They are here with us today, tonight, and I think we deserve it, because I think in this way the Europa League is one title, is one way to the champion, and above all is enjoy moment like today. I think the players, well done, but doing all they can. And we can be, I think, very supported, the same, proud of all Arsenal.
And of course, for you, you've made history in this competition already. Personally, you must be so proud to be going to yet another final, to have that chance to test yourself again.
Yes, but the past is for learned, took experience, and using the present. And only we spoke a lot in the dressing room, the players, with the players, their experience, our experience. How many finalists our players, and also Arsenal. And it's very difficult to play final. And our opportunity is a great opportunity, and today we did that. And we are happy, and we are very content to make that.
I mean, the team went a goal down early, but they showed so much character to come back. And in the end, it was such a convincing performance. How much confidence can you take, especially from your strikers and the way they work together going forward into this final?
Yes, we know they are starting pushing and also taking chances, doing the superiority sometimes with the right and left back, because our striker want to engage, but they attack in his side. But we worked very well doing the basculation, like Xhaka and Lucas Torreira. And after take our moment, and when they score it, be calm. We need to be calm. We spoke in the dressing room, all happened in the pitch after in the, we did need control, our emotion also. And we scored quickly, and I think give us confidence in this match. And after, improve, I think we were improving, passing the minute, we are improving on the pitch, feeling better. And after we can impose our game plan, and also with scoring four goal, again, this team is very, very difficult to score. They are very good team organized, but also when they need the second half attack more, is the moment we can use to do more attack for the transition and scoring.
Baku's Olympic Stadium has a capacity of 68,700, but UEFA has allocated only 6,000 tickets to each club, a decision Arsenal described as disappointing, and it presents them with extreme difficulties in how to allocate the tickets. I mean, I know it's a European competition, I know it's the Europa Cup and things like that. It does seem a little bit silly, though, doesn't it? You've got two teams making their all the way down to Madrid, and two teams making their way all the way over to Baku as well. Something's got to be done about that ticket allocation.
100%. I mean, it's disgraceful, really, isn't it? 68,700 capacity is the stadium in Baku, and just 12,000 of those fans, well, officially 12,000 are going to be for Arsenal and Chelsea. We know that many, many more thousands will get their way into the stadium. That's going to be by buying tickets on the black market, unfortunately, and the prices we've already seen for the Champions League, the prices have shot up for that one there as well. And it's a pathetic allocation as well for the new Atletico Madrid stadium, which has got, what, capacity of approximately, what, 65,000, something like that, and then Liverpool and Spurs fans, you know, not even getting half of that. Yeah. I mean, and then the prices that are getting paid for as well. Do you know my ticket for Istanbul was €15?
Really? So
that's equivalent to about £10.
Yeah.
2 years later in Athens, it was up to £100.
Yeah.
So
profiteering.
I mean, oh, absolutely, to the biggest degree, and it's, I think it's an absolute disgrace, really.
Give us your thoughts on Chelsea as well. Obviously, not as clean cut and as clinical as Arsenal in their semi-final, but they got there in the end. Thanks, in many ways, to a man who had to redeem himself with the manager after something of a penalty mishap earlier on in the season. But Kepa coming to the party, and two good saves from him.
Absolutely. He's been actually in good form of late. He made a few outstanding saves during the course of this game as well. Eintracht Frankfurt played very well. I think Chelsea, on the whole, I think probably deserved to go through from the two legs. But Frankfurt, they've had a great season in the Bundesliga. I think the fourth with two games left to go there, hoping to go into the Champions League for next season. But yeah, like you say, Kepa doing well and getting that penalty save that sends the Blues off to Baku.
Let's hear it from Marissa Sarri. He's always good for a comment or two after a game. Well, depending on the result, that is. What did he have to say after this particular victory for the Blues? And, of course, booking their place in to another European final.
Many congratulations. The story of the game in your words, please.
Oh, I think that we played a very good first half. Then in the first part of the second half, we went in trouble. We were passive in the defensive phase. So we conceded the goal, 10 minutes of panic. Better in the last part of the match than in the extra time. I think that we was really tired after 60 matches to play 120 minutes is really very difficult. We were unlucky during the match because we lost Christensen, we lost Loftus. So we started the match with three injuries and two injuries during the match. It's not easy, but at the end we can play the final.
Loftus-Cheek, is it a serious problem?
No, not serious problem, but he had the usual cramp after 75 minutes.
Maurizio, when we get to the penalties, how much preparation had you done for that phase of a match like this?
Yeah, there is no preparation for penalties because you can kick very well in the training ground, but then the pressure is different. So you need a great personality, a great character. So I think that it's really useless to try penalties.
The goalkeeping question comes up, of course. Did you look at Kepa and think, he's my man in a shootout, no question?
Oh, to be honest, I didn't look at the last two penalties. So I didn't know if Kepa saved very well or not.
So it's Arsenal, and a grand final, of course. How much will you look forward to that as the end of this season?
And now we need to rest. Unfortunately, we have to go to play in the United States because I think that in this moment we need to rest. We need to rest and then we have 10 days to prepare the final. We have to recover energy because we are really very tired.
And I understand why, but thank you very much.
Ciao.
This is The Grill, live from Barasti. Enjoy your weekend with a 99 dirham main and a hop lunch combo.
CVR's with us here. We've also been joined by Mark Archer and some very special guests who will be introduced in just a few moments' time. Why have we got all together? Because there's a small matter of a rather large game of rugby later on. CVR, what sort of time are we looking at?
Yeah, Tom, 8 o'clock kickoff here in Dubai. Of course, that game's coming live to us from St. James's Stadium in Newcastle, the home of Newcastle Football Club. But tonight, it will be the home of the European Cup final, should I rather say, the Heineken Champions Cup, which will be taking place between Leinster, the team from Ireland, and of course, Saracens, the team from England. Leinster looking to win this championship for the fifth time, and Saris, of course, looking to win it for the third time in just 4 years.
One man who's been there and done that, during his illustrious career with time at Scarlets, Blues, Ospreys, Bayonne, Racing, Sale, and of course, all those caps with Wales and the Lions. A man who made it all the way through to the final of the Heineken Cup, the very pinnacle of club championship in the Northern Hemisphere. A man who did this on more than one occasion.
Stay three.
Still they have it to go through Manuel Cariza, the Western Province lock. Oh, that's juggling. Well, it's a deception. No, surely it's going to be tried. Does Phillips have the leg? It's Mike Phillips. Cordero hunting him down. Phillips looks inside. North is there. But the dummy is enough. And Mike Phillips goes the length of the field to score.
Well, that's what they needed. But George North, just watch the supporting run. George North that takes both defenders away from Mike Phillips. This works, this is the mistake. It's the rush, bang, Higgard hits him, great tackle. The ball bounces into, just watch, the ball bounces into Mike Phillips. Head down, it's a foot race. But just watch, George North comes across, throws the dummy, both players go to him. Great support by George North. Good opportunist try for
founder of the Mike Phillips Rugby Academy right here in Dubai, Wales's most capped, most decorated, most successful scrum half of like all time, is of course Mike Phillips. Joins us live down here at Barasti. All right, Philippe?
Yeah, very good, thank you.
What's Jiffy going? What, is Jiffy like, I mean, the founder of the George North fan club?
Well, I run the whole length of the pitch and then he's praising someone else, so I don't really get it. That sums up my Welsh rugby career. I mean, I could carry the team for 15 years and they praise someone else, so just, well done, boys.
Jeffy's, you know, there, Philly's just gone over, yet another
Jeremy,
try.
What have I got to do?
Pulling
like?
The strings.
George didn't even touch the ball.
But apparently he drew the defence away.
Apparently that was amazing, yeah. Yeah, that was amazing.
Listen, Mike, it's great to have you here. I know you were on duty with the Academy a little earlier on today. Got summer camps in full flow at the moment with the Mike Phillips Rugby Academy?
Yeah, we got another 2 weeks left in Formac School. 9 o'clock Saturday mornings. We're there for 2 hours just working on skills, and it's indoor, and we've been getting good numbers, and the kids have been loving it, so we've been getting some good traction there. And then there's only 2 more weeks left of that, and then in the summer I'll be going back to the UK actually and doing some camps in the UK. But yeah, we'll continue this stuff. We're having a little discussion about it over the next couple of days about following on the format. So that stuff will all be on the website, Mike Phillips Rugby Academy. All the information will be updated there and on my Instagram. Mike Phillips Academy as well, so take a look out on that.
Really. Obviously, only recently retired from the game, moving over into the coaching, the academy side of things. First year of the academy, have you enjoyed it? Has it lived up to expectations?
Yeah, for me, it's just, I guess, it's getting into coaching, really, and see it, making a, getting a foothold into it and seeing whether it's something I want to do, you know, in years to come. Done a couple of badges now, and there's a level I just had an email coming through about a level 3 coaching course coming up, so I'm not might do that. You know, it's something that I really enjoy. It, I mean, I get a good buzz from it. It's great to see the kids, you know, having lots of fun and you know, loving the session. So yeah, it's something that I'm really enjoying it at the minute, and you know, love to progress with really in the future.
I saw you out in front of the Burj on the sand, throwing balls around with the kids a couple of weeks ago. Good video that's been posted up onto your site and on social media as well. Is that sort of one of the approaches that you like to take, making sure that the kids are wary of the fun element of the game?
Definitely, yeah. I mean, it's that's the difficult thing with the sessions. I really wanted to make them as fun as possible, but at the same time the kids are actually progressing and learning as well, and but it's all about fun, isn't it, especially when they're young, and making sure that they come back the next week and they're going away with a smile on their face, and they, you know, they've, but at the same time they've learned something new as well. So it's I put a lot of pressure on myself, but yeah, I think they're enjoying it, but you know, I've got lots of experience, and just really enjoying being part of it, really, to be honest.
Yeah, you talk about that experience, all that experience with Wales, with, of course, the British and Irish Lions on several tours as well. If people are listening out there, they want to get their kids maybe involved for the last couple of weeks, or maybe even looking ahead to the new season after the summer months, best way for them to do that? And what sort of age groups are you working with the academy? And if people want to get involved, do they just go to the website?
Yeah, check the website out. It's constantly updated, and Instagram as well, on the Instagram stories and things. So things keep changing. So keep an eye out. Like I said, I'm back in the UK all over the summer, doing on the camps, and I guess gaining more experience as well. And you know, the academy will be bigger than better next year as well. So it's all an experience, and yeah, there's some really interesting and exciting things planned for next season, with some interesting coming in, and like the fact that we did the Burj thing, hopefully that can be a continuing thing, and really exciting stuff looking forward.
I saw that you were doing some punditry work during the Six Nations tournament as well, so toying with
very Welsh accent.
I haven't done a Welsh accent there. That's my Hereford accent coming out, I'm sure. But you were doing a little bit of punditry work. Is that something you enjoyed, and have you been able to sort anything out for Japan yet?
No, I haven't yet. No, so
still open to suggestions.
Still open for offers. No, I did really enjoy that trip to Italy. It was quite nice. Caught up with Shane, my mate, and yeah, no, it's something I do enjoy. But it's, again, it's something that the more you do it, the better you get, I think. And I got lots of friends on the field, so it's quite difficult at times to sort of really state your full opinion. But you don't offend anyone. But I guess the older I'm getting, that's getting a bit easier as well. So it's all good.
Say it as it is. Listen, I've asked you along. I know that you've got a busy schedule this evening. I have to ask you along because there's no one better qualified to talk European rugby than a man who's been there, done that. Talk to us about your sort of your Heineken Cup, your European Cup highlights. You played in a final, haven't you? What year was that, and where?
It was 2016. Just had to Google that myself.
The years are flying by.
It was in France. It was bad memories. Obviously, we lost against Saracens, who beforehand we'd prepared really well, and you know, we felt as if we had, you know, we had a team full of world stars, Joe Rococo, Juan Imhoff. You know, we had a lot of X factor in our team going into it. I think we were really confident, and not blaming anything, but literally an hour before kickoff, the heavens opened and the rain started coming down, and it didn't really suit our game plan, to be honest. We wanted to play this open, attractive game of rugby, throw the ball around. And they were far more organised than us. We didn't really have an organised kicking game, which is silly to say, really, but at this time of year, you're generally playing with a nice dry ball. It's generally a nice open game, and you know, you're throwing the ball around. So, but we never really sort of really planned our kicking game as well as what they did, and And obviously that's why we lost the game, really. And after that, we did sort of nail down a proper kicking game plan, which sounds a bit silly, but we did go on to win the league that year. So, but it was tough to lose that final and get so close in the end.
That was during your successful time with Racing over in France, where you are not only a legend over in Wales, a legend over in France, and right here in Dubai. Pretty much all over the world, aren't you? I mean, is
pretty
that
much,
to say?
Yeah.
Okay.
So apart from Japan, obviously.
yet. Sure, later on this year.
He's taking Japanese lessons.
We will. We'll get that one sorted if we can't. But in terms of, I just wanted to get your thoughts on Saracens. I mean, team that you've played against time and time again during your career, for different clubs, for yourself as well. What happened at Saris? What was the change? Because, you know, when I was growing up, Saris were a sort of middle of the road team there or thereabouts. What made them become world beaters and dominators of Northern Hemisphere rugby?
I guess it's well reported, isn't it? They've got this great sort of team ethic, this spirit in which they, you know, there's such a spirit in the camp. They go away on these mini tours and they're off on holiday every other weekend, and they seem to have so much fun together, and it's a really close-knit group. They work hard. I guess they came in with, when they play, they have a simple game plan, simple kicking game plan. They got some top-class players, obviously, within that game plan, but in that structure. But yeah, they're playing for each other, and it's rugby's a simple game, and they do the simple things well. They've got a great defence, you know, one of the best defences in Europe. I think it's alongside Leinster actually today, so that'll be interesting. But yeah, great kicking game and X factor out wide. So I mean, it's and some forwards that can distribute the ball and who are comfortable with ball in hand. So all in all, it's they've got a winning formula.
Mike, you speak about a lot what they do for the players off the field. You're obviously now going into coaching. We read a lot of things about Saracens where they're helping players set up companies. Alistair Hargreaves is a perfect example. I think he's got a mini brewery going now in the UK. Certain guys are selling biltong. All these type of businesses that they're getting people or supporters of the club to invest in and kind of setting these players up for after rugby. How important do you feel that is for a player being in that position?
Massive, because Liam Williams was here a couple of weeks ago, actually, so I spoke to him about it. And, you know, that doesn't happen in other teams, really. And that's a big part of, being a family. And, you know, feel like you really want to play for a team like that, you know, really want to look after you, not just the there and then, but afterwards. And, he spoke, you know, how amazing they are off the field and putting people in touch with different businesses. And, you know, because it is a worry, you know, I've obviously been there now myself and, coming to the end, it happens overnight, really. But you know, if you've got that something to fall into, it's makes things much easier.
You were speaking about game plans a little bit earlier on. Obviously, Leinster have been hugely successful in this competition, as well as Saracens. Saracens into the playoffs of the Premiership now. How do you think Saracens will be approaching this Leinster side this afternoon?
I think that's why they're successful. I think I don't think they really care who they're playing. I think they play the same game plan every game. I think that's why they're so good. They're so boringly good, really. That's what being successful is. You have to do the simple things really well, and they do that. You know, they've got quality throughout the park, and they've got players who really want to play for that badge and play for each other. And you know, they do that with the things off the field. So, up against a Leinster side who've won the championship four times, is it? If I'm correct, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, it'll be a huge battle today. It'll be very close, and it'll probably come down to one or two decisions either way.
Looking at the starting lineup, and very interesting to see once again Mario Tojo getting chosen at flank this afternoon. Of course, we know what a fantastic versatile player he is. Do you think that England as well as Saracens are running into a danger now, where they're kind of moving this player around? We see the same example with Peter Steph Tatoy in the South African setup. Where do you feel is his best position, and do you think it's a good thing that they alternate players between different positions?
Well, he's still a young man, isn't he? And all I know of from the final I played against him, he was a nuisance, you know. And that's a good thing, you know. I mean, that's what you want. When the forwards I played with weren't a nuisance enough. That's what he's an athlete. He's an unbelievable career, and he's so talented. And I'm not too sure. I don't know the man, but I'm not too sure what his favourite position is. But he's talented enough to to swap positions, and I think that will only bring his overall game on, really, to be honest with you.
Now, I know that the last time that these teams met was in the quarterfinals of last year's competition, obviously Leinster winning in Dublin, going on to win the competition overall. As a former player, does that play any kind of role approaching tonight's game? Do you think will it be getting bandied around in the Sarries dressing room about kind of getting revenge? Will it give Leinster a bit of confidence, or do we pundits kind of read too much into that sort of thing?
No, I don't think so. I think there's so much gone on between then and now. I mean, players... they're so professional, it's all about the next game, and I think they would have quickly forgotten about that. I think perhaps they would have looked at the game back and maybe taken a few pointers from it and where they can improve. But I think it's all about the here and now, and I think both teams did really well in the semi-finals and getting to the stage, so they're on top form. A lot of the Saracens boys have been out injured, but now they've had a couple of weeks back. They should be back to full fitness, so could be a really interesting game. It'd be a very, very tight one as well.
You mentioned that about the style as well, a tight game as well, because I know there's been a description of these teams being like almost Terminator-esque. Are we in for a bit of a dull affair this evening, or do you think we'll still get the excitement that we hope for in a final?
Well, hopefully it'll be I don't know what the weather's like in Newcastle, but it might be snowing, you never know. But hopefully it's a dry ball, it's an open game, and I think both tens are great tacticians with the kicking game, so that's exciting as well, opening up the game with a kicking game plan. But both teams have got really good defences, great at the breakdown area, but hopefully we see an open, expansive game, and we can see lots of tries, really.
Mike, this game looks like it could be as close to our game of golf on Wednesday on paper.
Tell us the truth now, Walsh. What really happened on Wednesday?
My sources,
I know you like to blag a lot on this one.
My sources tell me Mike's got a sore back end knee from carrying arch for 18 hours. So.
No, but when you look at these the two teams on paper, 20 internationals, 10 British and Irish Lions.
I've only just started playing golf since 2 years.
That was a really great matchup, wasn't it? Very close.
Archie's been playing for 42.
Yeah, exactly. Was that televised, that game?
Yeah. But when you try and break these two teams down, there seems to be really little between the well-structured Irish Leinster system of play and Saracens, who are very disciplined with their style as well. You go position by position, and we talk about the international talent, 20 internationals in total, 10 British and Irish Lions, man for man, they almost cancel each other out. Who's got the X factor? Who's got that little bit of inspiration, that little bit of game-breaking between either team that could make a difference in the final?
Well, both teams have. That's the thing, isn't it? I guess both teams have. Both teams have been there and won finals. So I guess a lot of the Irish players this year, maybe, because they've had so much success, they over the last couple of years, the Irish boys beating New Zealand and winning Six Nations. Are they coming into a bit of a lull, maybe? Have they, the last game against Wales beat them quite easily in Cardiff. Has it been a step too far? I don't know. Have they still got that drive and that excitement? I'm not too sure. We'll see today, I guess. I personally think Saracen's going to win the game. I think they just have a bit more firepower about them and a bit more. The pack, I think, is slightly stronger. But it's going to be, it's going to be a toy cost, really, at the end of the day. We'll see. I guess that both number 10s have a massive part to play. Johnny didn't particularly finish the Six Nations very well. And I guess, Owen Farrell didn't have a great sort of Six Nations. So I guess, how they come off today is going to play a massive part, really. And if whoever's the most confident on the field and most dominant, I think we'll be a part of the winning side.
So I've just had a little look. It's dry in Newcastle, so there's a rarity, isn't it? 10 degrees, so it's not the warmest, but it's going to dry at kickoff, and maybe even the threat of a bit of sun around about 6 o'clock. So who knows? Interesting place to be playing a final. They're up there in Newcastle as well. A couple of people have been texting in, Philly, asking questions of
you.
It'll be a
good night out after, won't it?
It will be, won't it? Yeah. It's a Saturday night on the Tyne, isn't it?
Yeah.
Town on the Tyne. Somebody has texted in. Dave has texted in saying, "Do you?" I've always wanted to ask this of a player in a major final. Do you get a runners-up medal? Because to my mind, it seems to be one of the worst things to ask players to do. So, in response to Dave's thing, did you get a runners-up medal for that final? It must be awful picking up a runners-up medal.
Yes, but honestly, I don't know what it is. So,
really, no idea whatsoever.
Probably still in the bin in the changing room or something.
Is that the first thing that got flung as well?
Yeah, well, it's just you don't want it, do you? It's not what you want.
The question that I've always had as well, and I'm sure Newcastle will do it, as you said, Newcastle, they're like a bit of a pomp and circumstance. There'll be all the build-up, there'll be the fireworks, there'll be the sing-songs as well. One thing I've never got, though, and maybe you can shed a bit of light this, is there you are, you've been building yourself up to the biggest game of the season for you with your club mates. You're lining up in the corridor, waiting to go out, in the tunnel, waiting to go out onto the field. And then you're asked to grab the hand of a kid, a mascot, to take you out onto the field. Is that something that is just accepted nowadays? Is that something that's just part and parcel of the game? Because it just seems to me that if you're getting ready for one of the biggest games of the season, the last thing you want to be doing is babysitting.
Oh, I mean, it's nice for the kids, isn't it? It's nice. Something nice for the kids to be part of it all. And that's your duty as a professional athlete, isn't it, to sort of do that? No, I mean, it's nothing. You've got your mind on the game, and that's.
They're photobombing it all now, though. You know, there's some YouTube. My boy was showing me a couple of YouTube things earlier, not specifically from rugby, but other games around the world, where the little mascots, the kids, they go out onto the field. As soon as the camera comes down, then they're all making silly faces or doing dab dances or other things, bits and pieces. So something of a privilege.
But it's nice as well at the same time, because there's many videos of kind of kids who are meeting their favourite player, whatever sport it might be, and kind of being like starstruck, really, kind of not even saying a word. And it's wonderful when you see a lot of the players kind of engaging with them. What kind of player were you as well? Because obviously you have a lot of players, maybe I'm thinking football, for example, who, you know, say the likes of Roy Keane, who before a match was just kind of straight eyes forward, that was it, not even looking at the referee, anyone else, and that was it. And then you see other players who will kind of be engaging with everyone, kind of former teammates on the opposing side, maybe having a little chat with the mascot. Do you ever, what were you like? Were you relaxed beforehand, or were you kind of just in the zone straight away?
No, I think starting my career and majority of my career, I was very much a Roy Keane type of guy. I think, and I kind of felt as if I had to be on that edge to perform to my level. And I didn't particularly like players that were all laughing and joking and whatnot. And I didn't like, even to be honest, shaking hands after a game if we'd lost. I mean, no, and then friends, certain teammates would be hugging the opposition. I'm thinking, well, okay, give it an hour, and then. You know, like, clearly you can't just switch off like within 30 seconds. So I was very emotional as a player, so I just found that difficult, really, to do that. But, you know, of course there's massive respect there, you know, but as a player I was always probably more like a Roy Keane, but towards the end I was a bit more trying to have a laugh and a joke with everybody, really.
Mike, we often talk about sledging in cricket, and obviously it's always been part and parcel, particularly of Test cricket. Is there a lot of sledging in rugby? Do you kind of, I know there's probably a lot of F-bombing and swear words at times, but do the forwards sort of, and even the halfback is probably in a good position, really sort of get pretty lippy and pretty sort of vocal, you know, when the game's really underway, or everyone's just focused on the job?
Yeah, it can be. I used to do it, really. I used to try and, but I used to do it just purely to psych myself up, really, more than anything else. And honestly, it sounds a bit silly, but I heard interesting thing from Shane Warne, actually, when he had a bit of advice, and when he was going into a bit of a lull in a bowling spell, he said, his captain said, "Oh, have a little go at the batsman, because it'll just get your adrenaline going, it'll get your competitive edge up there, and it'll get you more on the edge and that's, I kind of did that a little bit. I'd have a little dig at someone and just to sort of get myself up for it, really, more than anything, not so much trying to put that person
on. I see it seems to become really prevalent in the last couple of years, is that if a player in the opposition knocks the ball on or turns it over, they all go over and slap him on the back. Yeah. They all kind of give him a bit of a slap and, come on, mate, you've just messed up for your team. Yeah. That seems to be happening a lot more now. I said every turnover or every sort of drop ball, the team gets in there and gives them a sort of a, the opposition team.
The Harlequins 15, Brown, Mike Brown. Yeah, so we played England in 2013, and I think it was our fifth try against them or something. So Cuthbert's running down the wing, and the footage is Mike Brown's missed the tackle on Alex Cuthbert.
Definitely the fifth, was
fifth
it?
Fifth or sixth, or sixth, yeah. Was it? Anyway, and all the footage is, so Cuthy's run around him and he's on the floor, Mike Brown, and I'm obviously coming in support, and I've seen that he's still got another 20 metres to go, and I've kind of thought, oh, okay, he's in. And I've just gone, turned round and just gone straight for Mike Brown and said, "Unlucky, mate." It's quite funny. But it's just, it's all bit of fun and games on the part.
Were you good at shaking hands with referees after the game as well? Just picked up the news that Jérôme Garcés, the French referee, will referee the final this evening over in Newcastle. So let's hope that the boys are well versed in their French. Did you ever play with Garcés? Did you referee a couple of your games?
Yeah, I remember one game we played. I can't remember who it was, but I can't remember the ref. But I remember I said something, and I was maybe said it a bit too loudly or something, and I sprinted off the whistle, and I sprinted after him down the changing rooms and knocked his door and said, "Look, I'm really sorry about that." And he was, you know, but yeah, so you get a bit hot-headed, don't you? And then you kind of apologise.
Mike, you said you're a person that was a little bit chirpy. Who's ever given you the best answer back that you didn't really have a reply for in your career?
Yeah, Bucky Spotha, I think. Yeah, he said. I said something to him, and he said that I had sexy blue eyes. I didn't know what to say, and I was gone for. We ended up losing the game, so I don't know. He won that one.
Big old backies, nasty old backies. Listen, we've got to draw a line. I know you're going off to. You got iftar tonight, haven't you? Hosting an iftar.
Yes, yeah. I'm not hosting it.
You're not?
No, I'll be
there. Thought it was the Mike Phillips iftar.
Yeah.
We're all coming around.
Little sideline.
No, it's great, isn't it? It's tradition.
I did like the little comment from our resident South African over there. The fact that these cottage industries that Saracens are helping to build had to be a Biltong industry, didn't it?
Yeah, one of them had to.
Had to be brewery. A Biltong industry.
Biltong and brewery, hand in hand.
Listen, Philly, I know you're going to be watching the game a little later on. You think that it's a game for Sarries, yeah, for the taking?
I think so, yeah, I think so. Just by a couple of points.
And in terms of the academy, gearing up for the end of the season, still a couple of weeks to go, though.
Yeah, a couple of weeks in Fourmark School, Saturday mornings, 9 a.m. Please get in contact on the Instagram, Mike Phillips Academy, or the website, www.mikephillipsacademy.com. Keep an eye out for that, or look at my personal one. Try and get through all the followers there's so many of them.
Eyes at the end of the summer. You mentioned that you're going back to the UK.
I'll be beating Mark on the golf course somewhere.
Oh, actually, I need to tap you up, actually, because I'm doing an event in July with a former teammate of yours, Nugget, Shank. So I'm going to need a couple of stories before we go into that one.
Okay.
Rather sillily, they're doing it at a brewery in Somerset as well, so I don't know if that's a good idea or not. But we'll have more details on that one. But after the summer, obviously a major focus, and you'll be back with the academy. We'll be talking all things rugby. There's a small matter of the World Cup. Wales, Six Nations champions, 2019 world champions?
Well, potentially. I think it makes it so exciting because anybody could win it. So it's going to be, I think it's going to be one of the best, if not the best ever. So, yeah, it's up for grabs, really. So that's what makes it so exciting, really.
Super Rugby coming to a conclusion as well, Mark Archer. You've been watching on. Obviously, New Zealand perennial favourites for the World Cup. Is that going to be the case as well this year, or a couple of injury concerns going into selection ahead of World Cup?
Yeah, a few niggles, but I think you look at Super Rugby, I think a lot of players, they're on enforced breaks, so a lot of them have been told to take weeks off, and usually you get players told to miss matches, but they're actually being told to miss a week of training and matches, and all the All Black squad, the enlarged squad, are having to take 2 to 3 weeks stand down period throughout Super Rugby to pace guys. But you're always going to, all the major teams are going to have injuries going to the World Cup. Young McKenzie, the flying sort of fullback, fly half, injured now. He's out for the World Cup. Ben Smith took a knock a week or so ago. So teams' strength of depth will get tested. And, you know, New Zealand know that too well. 2011, when we went through 5 fly halves to win the final, it's the team with the bigger depth. You've got to win 7 matches at a World Cup to win it. And so your squad depth will get tested. And so it is a very unique tournament like that. But Super Rugby, yeah, the New Zealand teams have been doing well. I just looked at the tables earlier. I don't pay too much attention to the tables. But the 3 New Zealand teams are ahead of any other. If it's ranked through the 15 or the 16 teams, the 3 New Zealand teams are out front. And then our fourth place team would head up the Australian Conference and be ahead equal with in the South African Conference. So, yeah, they're doing well. And, you know, again, lots of players have announced plans to leave New Zealand rugby afterwards, Kieran Reid for one. Other players now seem to be negotiating sabbaticals, where it's tougher and tougher to retain players in New Zealand. It's just the way the rugby world's going. There's so much more money in the Northern Hemisphere. So the New Zealand Rugby Union are trying to be creative to give guys almost a year off now, off contract, to go to Japan, go to Europe, have a season, earn some money and come back and then be eligible for World Cup. So it's going to be an interesting World Cup, but I think it's going to be the most even one on paper going into it. I think the last two, the All Blacks have been really clear favourites, 2011 at home, 2015 in the UK. I think they're still slightly ahead, but it's so much rugby to play. Northern Hemisphere teams, particularly buoyed by the Irish success over the All Blacks in the last couple of years, I mean, it's going to be really close.
Give Wales a sniff, though?
You know, with Mikey, I should say yes, but I still fancy England and Ireland at a World Cup to be slightly stronger than Wales. I know that sounds weird after
the
dominance.
Who paid for the golf?
There's only a table between us, Mark.
The loser paid for golf, Tom. And it wasn't from the Southern Hemisphere.
Look at that. Listen, I've got to let Mikey go. I could keep him for a lot longer, but he's got to shoot, and we will, of course, be in contact with him over the summer and when he gets back from his sojourn. Find out all the latest on the Academy website. Find out how he and his team can help you and your kids with their rugby development here in the region. If I don't see you before the summer, if we don't see you here or now before, enjoy your summer.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me on.
And enjoy the Champions Cup final later on.
Thank you very much. Thank
and
you.
Enjoy your iftar.
Thank you.
Cheers. Big thanks to Mike Phillips for joining us live down here. From one man who's been there, done that, one of the greats of the game, to another, a little later on in the show, a man who won three Heineken Cups with Leinster. Jamie Hislop joins us just after 5 o'clock this afternoon, so stay tuned for that.
Oh, it's a fabulous goal!
This is The Grill, live from Barasti, with more sport, the latest headlines, and top debate on Dubai Eye 103.8.
England playing Pakistan at the moment in the second ODI between the two teams. England going along nicely, 197 for two. Good opening partnership from Jason Roy and Johnny Bairstow. Roy eventually falling for 87 from 98 balls. Johnny Bairstow with 51 from 45. Currently at the crease, Joe Root, 39 not out, and Owen Morgan's just joined him recently. He's 12 from 9. Keep an eye on that one for you, as we will the Championship playoffs.
Absolutely, yes. It's Aston Villa hosting West Bromwich Albion in the first of the semi-finals, taking place today for that spot in the at Wembley, for that spot eventually in the Premier League. And West Bromwich Albion still one goal to the good over their West Midlands rivals. We are just over an hour into proceedings. They took the lead 15 minutes in. Dwight Gale pouncing on a mistake by Glenn Whelan and slotting home left-footed finish into the bottom right-hand corner. It was a wonderful goal by him after a pouncing on that mistake that was made by the Villa midfielder. Since then, Villa have dominated the ball, they've dominated territory, but in all honesty, it's West Brom who I think are in complete control of this game. Like I mentioned earlier on, 21 times they've taken the lead in the Championship this season, 17 times they've won the game, 4 times they've drawn. They have yet to taste defeat after going into the lead as well, so they are well in control. And I think if anything, despite the dominance that Villa have over the territory and the ball, if anyone's going to score a second goal here, for me at the moment, it looks like it's going to be the Baggies playing on the counter-attack, playing very well. They are so far very much comfortable at Villa Park.
Keep an eye on that one for you. Let's go over to America now. Let's get the latest from the NBA. Mark Archer.
Yeah, we're getting towards the business end of the season. NBA playoffs well underway. It's the conference semi-finals. Two teams we know now have qualified for their respective conference finals. In the East, the Milwaukee Bucks are through. And in the Western Conference, the Golden State Warriors, courtesy of a victory earlier today, are through to the finals in their respective conferences. Just give you a quick update from the Eastern Conference. So the number one seed, the Milwaukee Bucks, they've defeated the Celtics 4-1. They have advanced to the finals. They will face the winner of a Game 7 between the Toronto Raptors and the Philadelphia 76ers. That series is tied at 3. All Game 7 is early in the early hours of Monday morning, so we know who Milwaukee will be playing there. I fancy Toronto at home probably should get it done, particularly if Kawhi Leonard turns up and plays a big match there. Philadelphia have been a funny sort of team in the playoffs. They get big performances by some of the players, and then they just don't seem to be coming together and gelling properly.
Yeah,
and
but Joel's been ill, hasn't he?
Well, he says he's ill. He's got a headache. And the problem is that...
Yeah, he plays anyway.
Their other number one pick, Ben Simmons, the Australian player, is a wonderful basketballer, but he can't shoot. He hasn't got a jump shot, and that's really holding him back, because the teams can overload on Joel Embiid, and he just won't take that outside shot to spread the floor. But Western Conference is really, really interesting. It was a massive match this morning. Game 7 on Monday morning in Denver will decide if either the Nuggets or the Trailblazers will advance to the Western Conference Finals. That will be a close matchup. Denver at home should get it done. But who will they play? Well, they're going to be taking on the Golden State Warriors, reigning two times, back-to-back NBA champs, looking for a third, a three-peat in the NBA title. And it was an amazing Game 6 this morning. Let's just have a quick listen to the highlights. Game 6, it's Golden State in Texas taking on the Houston Rockets.
How do great rivalries begin?
The tension builds over decades.
Down to two, it's a three. Good!
Sometimes it happens in the play.
Look out here.
You never know when it's going to pop off. All it takes is one big play, and it's on.
Kawhi Leonard. Good.
Giannis.
Our biggest rivals, whoever we're playing that night.
Three on the way. Yes. Paul George nails it.
That was the hype for the NBA match, but let's just talk through an amazing match this morning, Game 6. It was all to play for, really, for Houston. So much, so talked about being the team that potentially of all the playoff teams that could get past the Golden State Warriors. And why? Well, their main man, probably the second best player in the basketball planet, Kevin Durant. Let's just rule LeBron James out. His Lakers team didn't make the playoffs. Kevin Durant was off injured. He injured a calf muscle in Game 5 in Golden State. He may be, we're not quite sure of the extent of the injury. He's definitely out of the match in Houston. He didn't even travel to Houston. He's most likely out of what would have been a return match. But who stepped up? It was, of course, the Splash Brothers, and the bench stepped up. Klay Thompson with 27 points. Steph Curry, now listen to this. Steph Curry, scoreless in the first half on three fouls, in and out of the match. Scoreless in the first half. What did he do in the second half? 33 points. Unbelievable, 33 points to get the Golden State Warriors without their best player with that injury. Defeat of the Houston Rockets, 118-113. For Houston, Chris Paul had his best game of the series with 27 points. He was phenomenal. But James Harden, despite scoring 35 points, despite leading all scorers in the match, a lot of the criticism is going to come back to James Harden because he simply can't get the job done. He's likely to be the regular season MVP, but when it comes to playoffs, he's just struggling to get it done. Limited game, we know how amazing he is. He shoots the three, he takes it to the hoop, and he shoots a lot, and he lays it up, and he shoots a lot of free throws. That's the game style for Harden. That's the game style also for Houston. But again, Mike D'Antoni, the coach, is going to come under criticism. He's had the tools, he's had the players, and he hasn't got them working there. But let's just have a quick listen before we come back and get some comments on Steph Curry speaking after the match, talking about the absence of Kevin Durant.
Steph, closeout games are always the hardest, and you didn't have your guy Kevin Durant tonight. How were you guys able to close him out?
I don't know. We stay composed. We've been here before, won big games, done it on the road. We miss our guy and know he's going to be back. But we had to have his back. We talked about it all the time. This whole playoff run, he's been the best player in the league, and he's carried us. So the least we could do is have his back tonight, move on to the next round, and give ourselves a chance to be at full strength the rest of the way.
You had 0 points in the first half. What changed for you in the second half, especially down the stretch?
Just stay out of foul trouble. It's always tough when I get in foul trouble in and out of the game. But guys were talking to me in the locker room, telling me to keep my head, stay aggressive. The floodgates would open at some point. Fourth quarter was amazing. We played amazing defense, took shots we knew we could make, and they went in. So it's just a big-time win for us.
You said guys were talking to you in the locker room. What were you thinking to yourself?
If I could get on the court and just play consistent minutes, I'd be able to do something. Thank my Lord and Savior for the opportunity to be somewhat healthy and be able to play this game and have another opportunity in the second half to take advantage of the moment. That's what happened.
You guys were down by 7 in the fourth quarter. It seemed like the defensive intensity just kind of went up a notch in the last 4 minutes of the game. Was that true?
It's been like that the whole series. It's just a matter if we can convert on the offensive end. Our numbers in the second half defensively are off the charts. And we knew at some point in a 48-minute game we'd have an opportunity to steal this game, and that's what we did.
And that left hand, like, what happened with that? Did it affect you down the stretch?
The same thing happened in game two. I just thankfully,
you're still holding it right now.
It hurts like crazy, but thankfully I have whatever till Tuesday to get it right and keep moving. So try to block it out as much as I could.
We'll have more from the world of NBA and, of course, the story of the playoffs in just a few moments' time. Got to take a break. When we come back, we talk to a former Ireland and Lions great. Jamie Heaslip will be live with us on the phone next.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcast at DubaiEye1038.com.